Penelope Fitzgerald was an English author who wrote 13 books, including 9 short novels, which vary widely in subject and setting. Her books won numerous literary prizes and much acclaim. But her life was as varied and dramatic as her fiction. She had a privileged childhood and was known as the blonde bombshell at Oxford, but she spent many years living in poverty on a houseboat on the Thames and later in a homeless shelter. She published her first book when she was 58 years old and achieved her greatest fame at age 80, giving hope to late bloomers everywhere. Hermione Lee, a biographer of many authors and the president of Wilson College, Oxford, has written a literary biography called Penelope Fitzgerald, A Life. It's published by Alfred A. Knopf, and I'm very pleased to welcome Hermione Lee to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
For those of our listeners who haven't heard of her, and it's surprising that I'm sure many haven't, despite her acclaim, tell us a little about Penelope Fitzgerald. Why should we read her books?
I think she's one of the great 20th century English novelists and also biographers. And you're right that people haven't heard of her.
Time magazine named her one of the 50 greatest British novelists post-World War II.
Well, they're right. And I'm here to, as it were, resuscitate her or bring her back. She did have a moment of fame here. Listeners may remember when The Blue Flower in 98 won the National Book Critics Circle Award. And The Blue Flower is a very extraordinary, good example of why she's so important. It's a very brief, subtle historical reconstruction of the early life of the German philosopher-poet Novalis. And it makes us enter into that world as if we lived there. She has an uncanny ability to take you into a moment of time and make you feel as if you know all the people and that you're part of that world.
Hadn't that book been rejected by her American publisher, Nan Talese? So does that suggest that it was a difficult book?
Yes, I think the marriage between Nan Talese and Penelope Fitzgerald was not made in heaven. She had never had a very easy ride here. There was a brilliant man called Chris Cardiff who got hold of her and brilliantly published The Blue Flower as a paperback original, which I think helped as well as its many virtues. So there was a time here in the late 90s when everybody was reading that book and the bookshop, which was an earlier book too. And then she died. She became famous at 80. As you say, it's an encouraging story, but it's also, as with much of her story, a sad story too.
Novalis was a German romantic poet. Would you call that book historical fiction? And I wonder about why she wrote it as fiction. She'd already written a couple of biographies.
She says that novels arise from the shortcomings of history, which is also a saying of Novalis. And I think she felt that fiction could enter into the inner lives of historical figures in a way that perhaps history books couldn't. You know, when we think of historical novels, I think we think of War and Peace or Wolf Hall or The Radetzky March. The Blue Flower's not a bit like that, and nor are her other historical novels like The Beginning of Spring, a beautiful book set in pre-revolutionary Moscow. She does all the homework. She spent 3 years reading all of Novalis's work. She pretty much taught herself German to do it. And then she pares it right down so that what you get is the essence.
And these are very small books, whereas War and Peace is a big book.
This is true.
because she also is writing about big subjects in some cases, but as you say, she pares it down, which makes them perhaps harder for some people to read.
She's elusive. She believed in indirection. She said she didn't like to explain too much because she felt it insulted the reader. There's a line of Novalis's, which actually isn't Novalis. It's made up by Penelope Fitzgerald, but it sounds like him, which I use for the epigraph of the biography, actually, which says, if a story begins with finding, it must end with searching. And she wants the reader to search as well as to find.
Would you apply that to your own work?
What, that kind of cryptic evasiveness? No, not at all. I'm the lumbering...
You want the answers to be there at the end.
I'm the lumbering person who has to explain. But actually, I believe that there are silences and secrets in all biography, and I don't believe the biographer should try and smooth them over.
Didn't her daughter approach you about writing this book?
Yes, her daughter and the daughter's husband, who are the executors, came to me and asked me if I would write it, and I took it as a tremendous compliment, a huge challenge and a great responsibility. It's different writing about someone like Virginia Woolf, whom I've written about before, where the story is there and everybody knows it and everybody feels possessive about it, but you want to write a new version, to writing about someone that no one knows the story of.
Didn't Fitzgerald review your book on Virginia Woolf?
She did, actually, yes. She was very kind about it. I knew her a little bit. Had I known when I interviewed her and like this and when I talked to her that I was going to be her biographer, I would surely have asked her more questions, but I probably wouldn't have got any more answers.
Would you have asked her more about her early life? She was born in 1916 into a brilliant and accomplished family. Who were some of her distinguished relatives?
Her family were called the Knoxes. Her paternal family were the Knoxes, K-N-O-X. And they were bishops, missionaries, code breakers, classicists. Her father, Ivo Knox, edited Punch, that much lamented English monument of comedy. One of her uncles was breaking the Enigma code alongside Alan Turing, though I don't believe he has a role in the new movie, alas. So it was an extraordinarily brilliant, quite eccentric family.
And in a family of high achievers like that, was her future success taken for granted?
Yes, I think everybody thought she would have a brilliant future as a writer. She did too. She was an outstanding, as you say, she was the blonde bombshell at Oxford in the 1930s. And then everything went wrong. The war came, everything was thrown apart. She got a job in the BBC. She married the wrong guy, although he was a very lovable and, you know, in many ways wonderful person. But everything went wrong for him. He had a traumatic war. He fell apart. He became an alcoholic. He couldn't keep the family. So then they plunge. It's an extraordinary story. They plunge through the nets of middle-class English gentility, really, into real poverty.
And that's surprising, considering the fact that the class system, especially then, was so rigid, it would be very hard to plunge through that net.
If you didn't...
Unless you really worked at it.
I think they kind of worked at it in that everything possible went wrong. They were very accident-prone as a family. Also, she was very proud. She had been trained to be very proud. You made your own destiny, you know. You didn't ask for help.
What kind of work did she do for the BBC? She wrote a novel based on those experiences, Human Voices.
Mm, she was a features editor, and she worked for in rather lowly work in programs.
But that novel is also about the Blitz, wasn't it?
It's wonderfully evocative story of the BBC in wartime in all its kind of comic magnificence.
You write that she loved writing about institutions that have their own peculiar systems and routines, such as the BBC, also mm-hmm. the British Museum, a theatrical school. What appealed to her about those kinds of settings?
She's very interested in institutions that have their own set rules, you know, like a public radio station, where things are done in a certain way. And she's interested in the people who break the rules or who don't quite fit in with the rules.
Do you blame Desmond Fitzgerald, her handsome young Irish Army officer husband, for many of the problems that she had?
I don't blame him, because I don't think biography is about apportioning blame. I don't think it's a blame game. I think it was an unfortunate and in many ways obstructive situation for her. She was determined to keep the children going.
They had three children.
The three children who were all, you know, survived. And she taught for many years, and she had all this writing going on like this underground river. I don't think she blamed him either. I think she felt it was bad luck.
They lived on a leaky houseboat that sank.
Yes, it was a barge, really. Houseboat sounds too nice. It was a terrible old decrepit barge, which, yeah, had rats and a puddle of water in the middle, and there was nowhere to wash. And then, finally it sank.
And then she lost all of her papers, didn't she?
She lost many papers, though I suspect, because she was so evasive, she would sometimes say, when asked about something, "Oh, it's at the bottom of the Thames." I'm not sure I always believed that, actually.
It may have been a low point in her life, but it provided excellent material for another novel called Offshore. Mm-hmm. But she wrote all of these books long after mm-hmm. the incidents.
Mm-hmm.
Was she not writing anything at this time?
Who knows? She was certainly thinking very hard about writing. She was annotating all her teaching books. She had edited a literary magazine with her husband in the 50s. There was not nothing going on, but she saved up these experiences so that they found their moment. And Offshore won the Booker Prize, so it earned its keep in the end.
V.S. Naipaul was the favorite to win that year for A Bend in the River, still a much more famous book.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't he?
Well, I think the judges perceived something very extraordinary going on in this quiet, reclusive, indirect talent, and they didn't go for the big. And it was treated, by the way, that win, with tremendous condescension at the time.
There was a memorable TV show on the BBC to discuss the judge's yes. decision. The host was being deliberately rude.
Robert Robinson, yes, I don't think he clearly hadn't read the book and was very outraged that he'd got the wrong person. And, you know, all he did was to keep saying to Mrs. Fitzgerald, you know, well, I don't like to upset you, but there are people who've sunk without trace after they've won the Booker Prize. It was very insulting.
Hermione Lee has written Penelope Fitzgerald, A Life. The first novel was written to entertain her husband during his final illness, but then she started writing so many books, four more books over the next 5 years.
She knew time was short.
I'm sure that you've thought about how productive she might have been if she had started writing earlier. Have you come to any conclusion?
I think that the pressure of time and the fact that she'd saved everything up and that she wrote 12 books in 20 years, was actually something that concentrated the work. And I don't know, you can't tell what the alternative history would have been. Yes, she would have written other things, but there's something particularly fine about these books that come out of this powerful sense of pressure.
And after she wrote five novels, all set in England and based on her own life, there was a dramatic change of direction. How do you account for the change?
I think The Hinge is a book she wrote about the poet Charlotte Mew, a very wonderful poet, where she got very interested in the idea of ventriloquism and of impersonation, you know, of pretending to be other people, of going outside your own experience. She also didn't want to write about the things that made her feel too sad. She didn't want to write about the terrible things that had happened in the family. So she moved back in time and out of England largely, to Russia and Italy and Germany and back in time in England. And she wrote these four masterpieces, extraordinary late novels, which I recommend to everyone to read.
She liked people to think that she was an absent-minded old lady.
Yes.
That was kind of a personal camouflage?
Yes, I think there was a lot of camouflage going on. So, and she was very willful with interviewers. So if she'd been sitting here and you'd asked her whether she'd ever been to Russia to write the Russian novel, on one day she might have said to you, oh yes, she'd spent lots of time there. And on another day she would have said, no, she'd never been there in her life. Actually, she'd been there for 1 week.
You have written many biographies of subjects, including Virginia Woolf, Willa Cather, Edith Wharton. Do you write mainly about women, or is Philip Roth the exception?
Not entirely. I have written about, yes, I have had some male subjects, and Philip Roth is one of them, a little tiny book, not a biography. My next subject is going to be Tom Stoppard.
What's gained in learning about the life of an author?
I'm deeply interested in the way in which the material of the personal and the public life get transformed into the stuff of writing, and the way in which character expresses itself through narrative.
Is it important for you when you're looking for a subject for a biography that you admire the subject?
Yes. I write from a position of admiration, and in this case, I wanted to bring her back into the public eye.
And Houghton Mifflin Harcourt has started reprinting her novels with new introductions. For a reader unfamiliar with her books, where would be a good place to start?
Yes, I chose those introductions and was responsible for those books coming out again. I think if you're starting, I recommend The Bookshop, which is a wonderfully tragic comedy based on her early life. And I recommend The Beginning of Spring, actually, the one set in Moscow just before the revolution.
Does it help when a writer's life is dramatic, as Tom Stoppard's is, or Penelope Fitzgerald?
Dramatic in very different ways. But yes, it's grist to the mill.
So you after Tom Stoppard, do you have any idea of where you're going to go, or do you take them one at a time?
Oh, I think there's quite a lot of time before the next book comes out. I don't want to think ahead too soon.
Hermione Lee will be in conversation with Wendy Lesser at the New York Public Library's Cullman Center tomorrow. That's at 7 p.m. Also part of a roundtable discussion at Columbia University on Wednesday at 6:15. For more information on both events, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org. This book, we are all hoping will revive the reputation of Penelope Fitzgerald in this country. How is she remembered in England?
Oh, I think now there is a tremendous attention being paid to her, and I think she is seen now as a really extraordinary, magnetizing writer who is finally having her due.
And have people apologized for the reaction to her victory in the Booker?
I think all those people are dead.
Really? Well, you're still here to to try to revive our interest. After she had that last success, she stopped writing.
She wanted to go on. It's really sad. She wasn't very well. The Blue Flower finally was making some money, and people. She was very much in demand. And the last scraps and notes that she was writing, you can see her looking for a late subject, looking for a last subject, and there wasn't another novel. And it's a very sad thing.
Penelope Fitzgerald, A Life, is published by Knopf. My great thanks to Hermione Lee for being on our show today.
Thank you.